You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
After retired Cold War Nike missile base on the headlands of Marin County, just north of San Francisco, lies the Marine Mammal Center. Whether it's waging a war on plastic, tending to a beached humpback whale that was trying to crash a baseball game in Candlestick Park, rescuing and treating over 16,000 elephant seals, sea lions, sea otters, and other marine mammals that get stranded along the California coast since the inception of the center, or offering exceptional edutainment for visitors, this Sausalito facility is truly one of a kind. My guest today is Executive Director of the Marine Mammal Center, veterinarian Jeffrey Bohm. I had the pleasure of visiting the center in June of this year and saw firsthand the fabulous work they're doing and why it's so vitally important for each of us to protect our ocean's health. For pictures of my visit, click on today's show, The Pet Doctor, on Pet Life Radio website. We'll be right back after the short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Petco, where the pets go. Petco, where the pets go.
Pet Life Radio has tail wagging, fur flying, fabulous deals for our listeners from Petco. Get $6 off your order of $60 or more, and up to 40% off the entire Petco site.
That's right.
But that's not all.
Because you're a Pet Life Radio listener, you'll also get free shipping on your order of $49 or more. $6 off, up to 40% off,
and free shipping
from Pet Life Radio and Petco. To get these awesome deals, go to PetcoDeals.com. That's PetcoDeals.com.
Petco, where the pets go.
I'm not much of a reader, but I do wish I were more well-read.
There are so many great books coming out. I wish I could find a way to keep up.
Audible.com makes it easy to stay well informed and catch up on your reading simply by listening. Audiobooks from Audible turn downtime into uptime. You'll be more productive and become well read.
Now I'm able to catch up on all the great books I've been wanting to read.
With Audible, I feel smarter.
Pet Life Radio listeners, try Audible.com now and get your first 30 days of Audible Listener Gold membership plan free. And get a free audiobook. Choose from over 100,000 titles. To get this great deal, go to audibledeals.com. That's audibledeals.com.
Hi, I'm John Carlin, creator and host of Fincasters. I have two passions in life. One of them is broadcasting. The other one is aquariums. Fincasters is where they meet. My goal is to create a place where you can go for consistently awesome aquarium videos. In less than a year, we've done Fincasts on everything from lionfish and sea urchin research in the Florida Keys to the keeping of discus and an examination of rare species like the freshwater garapanda. We even did a tank tour in a $16 million home. So welcome to Fincasters.
Watch Fincasters on Pet Life Radio's Chomp Animal TV Network. CHOMMMP.com.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Bohm, you have the quintessential job I think that ever veterinarian has wanted. You are at a spectacular facility, and thank you for being with us today.
Oh, it is absolutely my pleasure.
How did you get this dream job? It's like, oh my goodness.
Well, I have to tell you, I'm smiling as you make that introduction, and I want to pinch myself sometimes, and often as I introduce myself to whether it be our donor community or our volunteer community, I'm quick to reference the point that I am so honored, so humbled, and so delighted to be a part of this organization for a few reasons. Many of them would be obvious, but the one that is not obvious is that I started here way back when I was just coming out of high school into junior college. I'd grown up in Marin County where we're based. I wanted to be a vet from the time I was just a youngster, had worked in the back office of a couple of dog and cat practices, and found my way out here almost on a lark. For your listeners who don't know the area, finding your way out here is no mean feat. We're out on the coastline in a rough and wild part of the county. And here amongst old military buildings, it was this quirky little place taking care of seals and sea lions. The place was only 5 years old at the time I volunteered here. But Bernadine, it colored my career path like nothing else. I found myself sitting on the back of elephant seals, assisting in rescues, traveling out to the Farallon Islands off the coast on releases of these animals. And though no one was talking about it at the time, not only was I being impressed by the veterinary medicine, which was being performed here, but also by the conservation ethic. And it left me a marked man. I was not anymore just on a path toward veterinary medicine, but specifically impressed by and inspired by the role I might play in wildlife medicine, in conservation, and that has guided me, lo, these many years since then.
I think one of the things that really impressed me, there are so many things that impressed me about the center, how ecologically sound it is, how you've really just made yourself part of this area, and it seems like you have a rather small footprint for all that you're doing, but that it really appears to be state-of-the-art. I've seen some other rescue facilities, and it's like a little pool over here that's falling apart, and things are just cobbled together. But this is a center where, when did this present facility come into creation? Because I know there's been a genesis.
In 2009, the new facility was dedicated and opened, and that was really... One part, it was a look towards the future and what we might accomplish down the road. That was a hefty part of the vision. But it was also an answer to the fact that the organization since 1975 had been seeing year in, year out, more and more patients. Our clinical medical work had become more and more sophisticated. The research that clinical work was allowing us to pursue was getting international recognition and acclaim. Our education programs were growing. And all of that was despite the fact that we were working out of this abandoned Nike missile site. We're a nonprofit organization, and we're governed by a volunteer board of directors. And it was the wisdom of that group about 10 years ago or so who said, you know what, we need to take the physical plant and bring it up to a level where it matches the professionalism and the outputs of our team. And that they did by mounting this campaign with predominantly private funds to build this facility. And while it is state-of-the-art, there's more still we want to do. We are a part of a national marine mammal stranding network. We're actually operating under a letter of authorization from the National Marine Fisheries Service, which is part of NOAA in the Department of Commerce. And so we're governed in this network, but we're dissimilar from some of the other network players, as you suggest. We are purpose-built. This is what we do. We're in the business of bringing animals in off the beach, getting them well, and getting them back out into the ocean, and doing the research that allows and the education that's part of that as well. Other peers of ours have multiple agendas. It might be a public aquarium that also does rehab work. It might be an academic institution that also does rehab work. Some of our peers are actually working out of facilities not dissimilar from what we had 10, 15 years ago. So it's a role that we are happy to be in, but I think it not only gives us opportunities but responsibilities. We have 600 miles of coastline, which makes us dissimilar from others. We see more pinniped patients than most any other facility in the U.S.
And pinnipeds are the seals and sea lions.
Absolutely. Sorry, yes. So it's predominantly California sea lions, harbor seals, elephant seals that we see. And as you referenced before, occasionally we'll see a member of the group we call cetaceans. That's whales and dolphins, but that's few and far between.
And again, your facility, oftentimes you'll go to a aquarium and you'll see the pretty exhibits in front of you. But what really happens behind the scenes? And your facility is so transparent. You're walking through, and I'd like to have you address the fact that not all the animals that you rescue, sadly, are going to be released back into the ocean. Some of them succumb to their injuries, but you're learning so much from them. People can learn because you can watch a post-mortem, these animals, your bodies being looked into as what caused the problem, how they're being fed, where they're being housed, all of that is right in front of you.
I think it was a provocative plan that the board put in place to create this this new hospital that we have. And if you think about it, we're like a major medical teaching hospital that you might think of in your neighboring city, but we're so much more. And if you think of that same analogy, usually you don't take a tour through those medical facilities, but that's just what you do here. And the art of this was to create a working, sophisticated hospital for marine mammal patients and a visitor experience where one didn't work to the detriment of the other. You can well imagine if the hospital and the patients were so cordoned off and so remote from the visitor, one would ask, what was the point of coming? Likewise, if the patients were so accessible to the visitors that it compromised or gave the perception of compromising patient care, that wouldn't work either. As you mentioned, we've kind of turned ourselves inside out, made every functional working area visibly accessible by putting large panes of glass in between a visitor area and a working area so that people can really get a good sense of what we're doing. You referenced our pathology, and if we see 600 to 800 patients in a calendar year, which is not atypical, because these animals are wild, they come in having masked their illness just as long as they could. They're really behind the eight ball when they come to us.
Survival of the fittest.
Exactly. And it doesn't pay if you're a wild animal to call in sick, if you will. They will hang out and be as vital and energetic as they can just as long as they can. When they come in here, they're really quite ill. And getting half of them well and back out into the wild is a great success. In that other 50%, there is a phenomenal learning opportunity for us. Not only do we want to learn what happened to that individual patient, but by doing so, we're getting a window into that species health, into the population health along the coast, and in a fascinating way, into ocean health and even human health.
And I think that's what would surprise many people, because you think, oh my goodness, the ocean is so vast. You have some leftover trash from a major city, just dump it in the ocean. Or if you're going to be living in the middle of Iowa, how can what I do here in Iowa affect the ocean? I'd love to have you touch on that, because people are listening to us throughout the United States, throughout the world.
Let me give you a rather dramatic example of what we're finding here, and then get to the place of how it relates to just about everyone. We see, by virtue of the examinations we do, 1 in 5 of our adult California sea lions that come through our facility has cancer. And we're finding that it's the same type of cancer. It's a urogenital cancer. They also have
urogenital having to do with urinary tract system.
Right. So whether it's cervical cancer in females or preputial cancers in males, we're seeing a really high and extraordinary cancer cluster in these patients. We're seeing a coincidence of a deposition in their blubber of legacy contaminants, DDTs, more contemporary chemicals like flame retardants. We're seeing that potentially there's a viral cofactor, a genetic predisposition. Having said all of that, you can well imagine that, you know, while I don't eat fish each and every meal, these animals do. And they're feeding off of fisheries that we manage for human consumption as well. So right away we have the attention of folks who manage these fisheries along the coast. We also have the attention of folks in the human medical community who are oncologists who are looking at this as one of just a few cancer clusters in wildlife as a model for what might be emerging. Whether you care about the charismatic seals or sea lions or dolphins or whales, most people care about health, right, and their own health. And understanding ocean health is a good clue as to what we might want to be concerned with from an environmental perspective. I lived in the Midwest for about 16 years, and it's very poignant to many folks who don't live on the coastline that every waterway that is in their neighborhood ultimately is going to reach the ocean. And whether it be the remote shores of the Gulf of Mexico or whether it be the Pacific Coast or the East Coast, water flows into larger bodies of water, major rivers, and ultimately into the ocean. And so that anything that we do that influences our watersheds is ultimately going to influence animals in the ocean. So it's while it might feel not just geographically but functionally remote to be far from an ocean coastline, all of our actions matter, and that's where our education, I think, can make a big difference. Letting people know that there are issues, there are challenges, there are problems, and that every one of us, actively or passively, can make a difference.
I'm speaking right now with Dr. Jeff Bohm. He's just really opened up, I think, many people's eyes to how, in the middle of the United States, how what you're doing can affect the oceans, can affect our world, and going back and affecting your health. So please stay tuned. We're going to have a short little break. We'll be right back and chat more with Dr. Jeff Bohm, talking about the Marine Mammal Center in California. Stay tuned.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Introducing the new Brett Michaels Pets Rock Collection, exclusively at PetSmart. I created it for the pets that rock your world.
Shop the Brett Michaels Pets Rock Collection and celebrate PetSmart's 25th anniversary with up to 25% off thousands of items on the PetSmart site. Plus free shipping on orders of $49 or more. Go to PetSmartDeal.com. That's PetSmartDeal.com. PetSmartDeal.com.
Dyson.
The new Dyson Animal Vacs are powerful bagless upright vacuums for homes with pets. Air muscle and radio root cyclone technology generates the strongest suction power to powerfully remove dust, dirt, and pet hair from the home or car. To order your Dyson Animal Vac, go to DysonDeals.com. DysonDeals.com to order your Dyson Animal Vac today.
Dyson, music to your ears.
Aquariums and pond keeping are among the most popular of all hobbies in the United States and throughout the world. In fact, fish are probably the most numerous pet in people's homes and in their businesses. In Aquarium Mania, we'll learn more about the secret and not-so-secret life of fish and other inhabitants, the basics of good aquarium keeping, the complexities of the aquarium industry, and the science and art that surround this fascinating hobby. I'm your host, Roy Anong, and I'd like to thank you for joining us. Aquarium Mania.
Every week, on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Bohm, I think you set off some, you know, red flags in people's minds thinking, oh my goodness, I'm eating so healthy because I'm eating fish. Doesn't mean that we should not eat fish. It just means that we should be cautious of everything that we're eating and doing. Would that be a correct statement?
Correct. What we have is a window, obviously, by virtue of the animals that we work with and the environment that we work around into ocean and ocean health. But that is one facet, obviously, of what might impact people. There's, you know, the quality of the air with that we breathe, the things that we surround ourselves with in our homes. Our nutrition is but one aspect of what can impact our health. Certainly, we're not in a position where we're advocating that people stay away from seafood. That's not our point at all. It's more that we are finding a very curious and perhaps alarming incidence of cancer in our patients that we think bears, you know, further scrutiny and further understanding. And it's just one more example of something that environmentally, globally, is ringing an alarm and causing us to think about what our actions are. And we see 100,000 people a year out here at the Marine Mammal Center. And believe me, if we led with this story with young kids and families, we would have them running from us. We don't want to be about doom and gloom. We want to be about hope. And I think there is hope to be found in the discovery process that we have and the opportunity to understand and first of all, identify some of these situations that are occurring and then start to think about what the what changes might be made, either on an individual basis, perhaps on a policy basis, perhaps on a very grand level, to start to affect change, to create an ocean system that my kids, my grandkids, that generations to come can not only appreciate and rely on for the beauty and the wonder that they represent, but also for sustainability and for healthy food and for the other economic benefits that a healthy ocean represents.
You're talking about change, and over the years since the Marine Mammal Center has been there in Sausalito, have you seen a change in the types of injuries and illnesses that these animals are presenting with?
That's an interesting question. It's one we get often, and I mentioned earlier that we cover 600 miles of coastline. Some of that is rather remote here on the central and northern California coast. If you look at the population basis, the number of eyes that we have out on the beaches, really our first responders are just individuals who happen to be on the beach who see an animal that's in harm's way. To really compare what we're seeing here this year compared to our beginning years in the mid and late 70s, founded by not understanding just how many what the effort is that's being put into looking at animals. Having said that, we have seen over the years an increase in a few different scenarios. One is the presentation of animals that are just frankly malnourished, not getting enough groceries, not finding the food that they need to really transfer from that dependent state that they have as a pup into being a healthy juvenile animal. We see toxicities with an increasingly alarming rate. This is classically a toxin that's a naturally occurring toxin produced by algae, but when consumed by sea lions, classically in large quantities, causes a seizure disorder. An extraordinary presentation, obviously, but more extraordinary is that if they consume it chronically, they don't seizure, but they actually lose brain tissue. There's atrophy of areas of the brain, and these animals present in a really worrisome state. Again, coincidentally, this is a toxin that impacts people as well. We see infectious diseases. We see alarmingly an incidence of trash entangled animals, which, you know, one could argue that all these things are connected to human actions. But when you see a sea lion come in with a balloon ribbon wrapped around its neck so tight that it's actually cutting into the skin, that's just heartbreaking. When you see an animal come in that's been shot purposefully, gunshot, that's heartbreaking. These are things that don't need to be occurring, and making people aware of them is part of what our mission is.
When I was there, you were talking about things being wrapped around an animal's body. Many people probably have seen the movie Dolphin Tale, and this dolphin that washes up in Florida, and it has to have its tail amputated, or dorsal, which fin was it?
It was the tail flukes, yeah, right.
Tail flukes. Had to be amputated. Yeah. You have a exhibit or a display that shows these rafts and maybe you can describe how expansive they are, of just junk plastic that's floating in the middle of the ocean. And correct me if I'm wrong, you really can't just go out there and collect it all.
Yeah, it's becoming more and more well understood and well studied and more commonly understood just among members of the general public that there's enormous amount of garbage and debris that is floating around our oceans, not just the Pacific Ocean that we're adjacent to here, but most of our large ocean waters where there are gyres. So these circulating vast areas of water that collect and concentrate debris. The tsunami in Japan has brought this to light as folks are now tracking sad, devastating event just from the point of view of human loss, but also the repercussions of in the wake of that, if you will, the materials that are now out circulating in the Pacific Ocean. These things conjure up images of this garbage patch that you could conceive of a giant net coming along and scooping up. On the one hand, it's that simple. On the other hand, it's nothing near that simple because many of these materials, many of them being plastic, will break down into smaller and smaller bits of plastic. And eventually, there are images, on the one hand, of very graphically of seabirds like albatross, where a parent will be feeding its chick bits of plastic that are brightly colored that they see as food and putting them into the crop of the chick dying, obviously, of starvation. That's one graphic image. Another, more subtle, but I think to me still graphic image, is these apparently pristine waters that when one takes a sample of them and concentrates the water, one finds small particles of debris that are just as damaging and perhaps more menacing in that they're consumed by ocean-dwelling animals like fish and become actually incorporated into their bodies. Disturbing stuff. And again, something that really, I think, speaks to a visitor here as they take on board what, you know, at a very base level, what their consumer practices are, what they're doing with their dollar as they're thinking about what they're going to purchase, what materials that product might be made of, and what impact that ultimately will have on a waste stream that ultimately either haphazardly or just by virtue of the way our trash is managed may find its way into a waterway.
This expertise that you have at the Marine Mammal Center is mind-boggling in so many respects because it is entertaining to go and see and have the docents take you on the tour and show you pelts of the various animals and explain how you know the difference between a seal and a sea lion. But your expertise really extends much more as you're talking about research. And I believe you also go beyond California. Where else have your researchers, your veterinarians, assisted the oceans, assisted these marine mammals?
It's a great point. We're geographically centered here on the west coast of North America, but by virtue of the number of patients we see, the expertise and long tenure of some of our scientific and clinical staff, we are called upon to work with folks literally around the world. We were called upon a couple of years ago to facilitate the work of a group in Northern Europe that was seeing a higher incidence of seals presenting to their rehab facility than they ever had before. We are embarking this year on a new project in the Hawaiian Islands where we are building a small satellite facility to take care of the endangered Hawaiian monk seal. There's 1,100 animals left, and there's no dedicated facility to take care of orphaned pups or entangled adults. And there, every patient matters to the species itself. We're called upon to work with really complicated issues of policy and conservation and management of great whales and dolphins, which has taken us and some of our team to Southeast Asia and to South America. Conversely, we attract a lot of people from around the world as well. There's literally nowhere else on the planet that if one is interested in studying the medicine and rehabilitation of seals and sea lions that one could go where there would be more exposure to the practical handling and management of individual cases than the Marine Mammal Center here in California.
What you were talking about previously is your how you became involved with the center initially as a volunteer. And I know people going up and down any of the coastline and you see a stranded animal and you immediately don't even think. You just want to jump in, you want to help, and you want to get it out of the water or put it back in the water. What should somebody do if they see a stranded marine mammal or any type of animal such as that?
So they should follow the initial instinct, which is to want to help. But at that point, what we strongly recommend is that they get on the phone, that they contact us or contact any local park office, depending on where they might be. 911 is always a safe bet to be able to refer them to the appropriate responding agency. Here along the West Coast, contacting us is ideal. We would then get someone out who is trained to be able to assess the situation. Commonly along our coast, harbor seal pups are born, and the female is needing to go out and fish and hunt herself while that pup is still being nursed, so she'll leave that pup on the beach. People will come upon that pup and think it's abandoned when it's just basically being being left alone for a little bit while the mom is fishing. They'll pick it up, they'll bring it to a place like ours, and inadvertently have caused a situation that's really a threat to that animal rather than just leaving it alone. So we caution people to just leave the animals be, to use their phone, to contact us. We can get someone out there who can assess the situation and determine what best to do.
And if somebody says, this is what I want to do, I want to be the next Dr. Jeff Bohm, and I want to start volunteering, besides your facility, what are the other ones in California, throughout the United States? Somebody's living in Marin County and wants to go to you. Can they just show up on your door and say, hi, I want to volunteer?
I would welcome them to do that. We would love to see them. There are more efficient ways of getting access to our volunteer opportunities. Our website, marinemammalcenter.org, could lead folks towards our opportunities. We have a youth volunteer program that allows, and it's fairly competitive, allows a limited number of 15-year-olds to 18-year-olds to get experience with us. We have 1,100 volunteers, and on the one hand, I'm extraordinarily proud of that workforce. We rely on them to get our work done. But on the other hand, we're always needing more as well. And what surprises some folks is that we have accountants, we have retail professionals, we have folks from all walks of life doing medical work with our patients, actually administering the care to these patients that they need. That surprises a lot of folks. We provide the training and we benefit enormously from the goodwill and the volunteerism of the public. So I would encourage, if folks are thinking of this as a career path, my gosh, get the experience. Find that local little rehab center in your community. Spend time there. Go through the educational programs that they might have. If a person is of the appropriate age, get that volunteer experience. Dabble, get experience with different types of wildlife, with domestic animals, and by virtue of that, get great skills, but also get a good sense of what makes where your passion is, right?
Does this work for you?
Yeah, and what is it that you find the most fulfilling? Because there are enormous opportunities, more and more, for those of us in the veterinary profession to do work that finds us at tables where we just were not present before.
That's one of the things I enjoy so much about veterinary medicine, being able to have the show talk to people such as yourself to inform the public of what veterinarians do. It's more than what they oftentimes think of, just veterinarians taking care of cats and dogs, all the research that you're doing. People want to get involved. They need to realize it's not all fun and games. Sometimes it's going to be pretty stinky, and sometimes it's going to be rather sad.
Yeah.
I think you have just given us a marvelous overview. I love the fact that your website is extremely user-friendly. You can see so much that you're doing. It's very educational. Again, if you could mention your website, we'll have it posted on ours also.
It is marinemammalcenter.org. welcome people to visit the site and also to visit our location in Sausalito, California.
And if they happen to have some extra money and they didn't know what to do with it, would you accept it?
I would gladly accept it. We do rely on the generous contributions of individuals, corporations, foundations, and in this difficult economy, we're forever looking for new relationships and new ways to demonstrate the relevance of our work to folks in all walks of life, as I mentioned before.
Well, no matter if you live on the coast or if you live in middle America, there's always something that you can do that can help your pets, help your planet, help your oceans. Dr. Jeff Bohm, thank you so much for being with us today. Great facility. Please take a look at the website, take a look at the photographs that were taken, and please come back again next week when we'll have more information on how to make you the best possible pet owner you can be. This is Dr. Bernadine Cruz with the Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. Thanks for listening.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.